Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan, and today reaching out to New Jersey to talk to Tom Kanick of Kanick. Is that correct? I say it right?
Kanack. It's a long A. Kanack. Nobody gets it right. We agonized a lot over the name, and they decided to do like a Van Halen and use my name and change it so that it's a palindrome. But we thought maybe that would get it easier to pronounce, but it did not.
Well, brother, tell me a little bit about yourself. Were you born and raised in the Jersey scene?
Yeah. So I'm born and raised in New Jersey, and grew up, music was my escape from anything bad, good, indifferent, whatever. And I loved rock and roll growing up, huge Beatle fan, British Invasion. And then in high school, a kid in the bathroom introduced me to punk rock and played me Sonic Reducer by the Dead Boys. And that was it. I love the energy, the anger. And I'd always written songs. I taught myself to play piano and guitar when I was just a little kid because I wanted to write songs.
Yeah. So where would you do that at? Did you have a family member that gave you access, or would this happen at school?
No. I had a cheap little cassette recorder, and then I somehow convinced my parents to get another cheap little cassette recorder. So I would do, you know, multi-track. I would record myself playing guitar here, play it back over here. I had all sorts of crazy things. I had fishing weights on the keys of a keyboard that I could step on the volume and it would come up in volume. The keyboard was one of those, we found it in the garbage. It was one of those ones that you know, when you turn it on, has the drum machine built in.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it home and I turned it on and it was great. It worked. You know, I realized after a while why the people threw it out. They had pushed in the bossa nova setting and had the tempo set to the fastest. And whenever you turned on the drum machine, you got super fast bossa nova. Nothing else. Like chicka 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 chicka. So that's how I learned to play fast.
Man, that's interesting. That helped with wanting to be in the punk scene. Fast music, right there. That's awesome. Yeah. And how old would you say you were during that time? Was that a lot of how did you figure all that out?
I just wanted to do it bad enough. I mean, I started writing songs, believe it or not, when I was like 5 or 6 years old. My first song attempt was a parody, and got my mouth washed out with soap.
Oh.
Because I was in the bathtub teaching it to my brother, and nothing could be finer than to be in her vagina. It was an early rhyme scheme. So as a kid, as a little kid, I might've been 7 or 8 at the time, but I got my mouth washed out. So pretty good by my mom. But I was a kid and I really loved to do music, and I wanted to do, you know, I didn't know anybody else who played music. So I wanted to do everything myself. So the only way that would work in my mind was with the two cassette recorders. And it was good. I had all sorts of gadgets. I had coat hangers booked to harmonica under the underside of my twin bunk beds, I'd put the wires through so I could play harmonica and play guitar at the same time, you know, like all these crazy things. I use my dad's old traction equipment for mic stands, you know.
Man, that's awesome. So, moving on down the timeline just a little bit, how long would it be to you would find some people to begin to make music with? What would that journey be like?
So in junior high, I met a drummer and another guitar player, and we had a three-piece band, and we played a lot of like epic jams. It was a lot of marijuana involved, I'm believing.
Oh, sure.
But I was a big Beatle guy, and I always ended up playing with guys who were into, you know, something else like Rush or, you know, Zeppelin or any prog rock. And I, you know, I didn't hate that music at all, but I couldn't sing it. Even before my voice changed, my voice was too low to sing, you know, like Yes or anything like that. And I was never a good enough guitar player to play all those parts. So I was more of a strummy guy. So I sort of gravitated towards those bands, like, you know, the Stones and the Who and the Beatles. And then, you know, in the 70s, like I liked the Knack, Cheap Trick. And when I heard punk, I realized that that was sort of like a version of Beatles songs, guitar band songs, but just filtered through some rage, which, you know, I had access to.
Yeah. Would y'all go on to play some shows and begin to break in the New Jersey scene under that namesake and band?
So when I was in middle school, my friends and I got together and we formed a punk band. Even from the very first show, we did our own songs, but we did a lot of covers, and we played at junior highs all over. And we were, you know, we played Dead Boys and the Damned and the Ramones and the Clash and our own songs. And it was, you know, it was pretty different, you know, for middle school.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, man, what about moving on into high school? Was there any other interests other than music, or were you still hung up on that, or would
So
you?
when I was younger, I played sports. You know, I played baseball and football and basketball, and I loved sports. A lot of musicians don't play sports, but I really, really loved sports, and played on a couple of Pop Warner teams that won big championships. It was a great experience. And, you know, playing organized sports, learning how to operate within the framework of a goal with everybody's egos, you know, team sport is a good example of working in business or in a band.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really good. And then in you know, we started playing these shows, and then my friend, the bass player, this guy Joe, I was in a band called Mischief, and we had a
That's a good
record
name.
out. Yeah, well, it was a good name, and then I think we abandoned it at some point. But Mischief, because our first show was on Mischief Night, and we were together for 6 or 7 years. We opened for the Lords of the New Church. We played a lot of shows. We did a lot. And Joe, the bass player, was really good friends with Styb Bader. So when I was a kid, 16, 17, we used to go to the city and hang out with all those punk bands and got to meet them all, see them all. It was a really great experience. So.
Tom, you said something interesting just then, and here around Mississippi in the area that I'm in, we never really did it as kids, but Mischief Night, a lot. I mean, that's here in
Oh.
this southern part of the U.S. We really don't do it a whole lot. So, could you give us an example of what the Night of Mischief is about?
So it was a night that you would go out and create, you know, havoc by vandalizing, light vandalization generally, people that maybe you didn't like or you had a beef with, or that it was your friend and you're doing it as a goof or whatever it was. And it would involve, you know, soaping car windows or throwing toilet paper into the trees. People would do the flaming bag of poo. They'd shit in a bag of and set on fire, knock on the door and run away, and, you know, whatever. All crazy things like that. And I did a couple of those nights until my father caught me, and it was a bad experience that I was reluctant to revisit.
Yeah, man. It's like some of those things will happen in the area. Maybe it's the football coach, you know, or maybe the head baseball coach, and it's a gag from the players if they went so far in the playoffs, but that's really about as far as it goes around here.
Yeah, well, that seems way more civilized than here. We were out like commandos. You know, we would take cork and blacken our faces and crawl into the
Oh
bushes. It was like full on.
man.
people would get people to egg houses, or toilet paper houses, and I don't know.
Well, how far down the road would it be before would you go on to college, or how far along are we until Canuck or
So there's a lot of years.
I'm gonna get it.
it's sort of like kayak. It's K knack. Like if you say K-knack. The word K and then the word knack, the knack, like K knack. That's how many.
K knack. Yeah. K knack. I got it now, dude. Yeah.
Thanks. That's way faster than my wife when we got married. So different story. But yeah. So in high school, we were playing in clubs in New York, and we were playing all over. And we released a record right after high school, and you know, we played a lot. We played a lot of colleges, and Mischief was a really good band. Our timing was a little off. We were sort of Nirvana-esque before Nirvana. We were, you know, like a punky REM, if you will, and right around that same time. But you know, then metal broke, and you know, I couldn't sing that way. I can't screech and sing high. I have a very specific voice, and it's not like a metal voice. So after Mischief broke up, I was in another band called Well Souls for a while, and we did a lot of national stuff, opened for a lot of national bands, got some airplay, you know, did a lot of things and got close. But and I got married and had 4 kids. And
with that iteration, what do you think it was that helped get y'all a little bit closer to, you know, opening for national tour and bands?
So we were really good live, you know, really intense live, and I thought the songs were good, you know, poppy songs that have an emotion or a feeling, like something deep in them, you know. Like I've always tried to make some extra money playing in cover bands, which, you know, I sort of resent when guys can do it, but I really struggle with it. It's like if I can't play a song that I don't feel, and or that I care about, or that I connect to. So I can't play Brown Eyed Girl because I don't care about it, and you know, I can't keep that off my face or out of my voice, I guess. So you know, I get really into it live when I sing my songs. I really connect to them with feeling, and I think that was one of the things that Well Souls helped propel us.
I think that's one thing that it's kind of hard to do. I see it. I host the one of the open mics here in the area. And we got a lot of young people coming out to share what they got. And they're real timid at first. They're doing covers. And then eventually they'll break an original out. And it's almost like they're learning how to have stage presence all over again. Because, you know, it may be the first time they're sharing one of their own songs for the first time. And, man, after they get it behind them and they hear the crowd clap and cheer a little bit, man, you ought to see it at the countenance it lifts up in them.
Oh, that's really cool.
You know, it's something, it's hard to do. I'm with you on that. Covers is one thing, but stepping out and letting your song live and breathe is something totally different.
It is a bit like dropping your pants. I mean, it's exposing yourself in a way that is sometimes more vulnerable. You're letting somebody into the way you think, the way you feel, the way you are. And it's a big ask, you know. If you get rejected for that, it's really personal. So I think it took a while. I mean, I don't know. I've always been compelled to do it. So I always feel like I'm just on a ride that's happening without my control. So.
Yeah. So y'all were opening up for some national touring bands, had some radio success. You mentioned getting married, and so your life was about to change. Where would that lead you?
So we had 4 kids in my first wife and I in 3 years. We had a set of twins, and I loved being a dad, and I really wanted to be a good dad, and I wasn't sure that I could still commit 100% to music and be a good dad. So I took some time off, and it was really hard for me to do, and I got really tight inside. So I started working at night after the kids went to bed, and it, you know, took me a couple of years, but I wrote this really great thing. One of these things I'm really proud of, where I created this record that had a total cycle, a song cycle. It started in the morning and went to the end of the day, and this internal thought process of somebody during the day, whether, you know, they were going to let their damage decide who they were, whether they were going to overcome it. It was really deep and, you know, interesting, but took me a couple of years to write it, and then I sat on it for a couple of years, and I played it for a friend of mine, and he really loved it, and then somebody else really loved it, and then eventually I decided to actually record it with a band. And then as we recorded that, that took a couple of years because it was 30 songs. It's called Undertow. It's on Spotify under my name. It got really great reviews. I mean, really, really great reviews. And, I didn't have the money to do much with it, but I was really felt good to get it out. And then I just continued to write. And the guys from the studio, we started to play live, and then it evolved into to be Tom Kanak and then Tom Kanak Band. And then after a while, it was really a band of guys who were contributing. You know, Johnny Rao, who played with David Johansson's band, his guitar player, Pete Wood from Dramarama's playing guitar. Joe Rowley plays bass and Steve Brown plays drums, and everybody contributes, and it's really become a band. So we wanted to name it something different, and they wanted to use Kanak just because it was, you know, they thought it was fun to be a palindrome. But as I mentioned earlier, didn't help anybody pronounce it.
So, man, when you are in your songwriting process, and I'm sure each song is a little different in how it comes and how it begins to flesh out, but when you have the finished product from you writing it solo and presenting it to the band, are some songs to where y'all write together? How does that work for y'all?
That's a very good question. Hey, is this, am I on show 634 or are you?
Let's see.
Is that, that's pretty amazing. If that's the case, that's a lot of shows.
It will be 636.
Well, that also is a palindrome. So when I write, it really depends. Like I try not to develop the songs too much before I bring them to the band, because that sometimes creates conflict. If I have a really distinct feel for the song and the band takes it in a different direction, I have to either fight for it and fight back or let it go in that direction. So I try to keep my presentation to the band very simple, a click track, the melody line and any words to a very simple single note, dun dun dun, on a guitar, sort of just to pulse it. I play the changes on the bass string and really simple, because, you know, I've written entire, you know, orchestral pieces, you know, where there's 60 guitars or whatever, but when the band gets them, they're not gonna do that.
Yeah.
So they do contribute to the arrangement a lot and parts. And John, everybody writes a little bit. Johnny writes a lot. Johnny has a couple songs on the last record, and there's a bunch of songs going into this one.
Yeah, that's always it's a fun process. With some of the guys that I'm playing with now, we're taking songs of mine that had been written 10, 15 years ago now. And it's fun to, it's like breathing brand new life to it. When these are people who come from like different backgrounds. Like I've got one guy who is just into jam bands. So he likes Grateful Dead and Fish and all that. And so he wants to take a 3-minute solo and, and you know, just all these different influences coming together. And it's always, it's always just great to see how it kind of all comes together.
Well, it's giving up a little bit of ownership, which can be scary, right? I mean,
yeah. There is that too. Cause I mean, how often does that happen? And, you know, with bands breaking up, that's a great place for it to start. Creative process and not agreeing right there.
Well, so this band is five, you know, guys who have been around for a while, who are all really good on their own instruments and are all actually really creative and good writers and stuff. And it is sometimes, you know, a little bit uncomfortable. What I found was at one point in time, I had a band where I just wrote everybody's parts and they were just like, you know, robots. And, you know, the songs were great and they sounded really good, but they sounded like exactly like me. There was no other influence, so it wasn't as interesting to me. And by relinquishing that bit of control and letting the other influences come in, it makes it something different than it ever would have been. And I actually like that better. Like, I feel like it does more. The songs are, in my opinion, always more interesting, always better that way than if we just did my limited influences, because they're always going to sound the same.
Man, there was a guy in the area. I think he had really good advice when it came to that. Was whenever he would have different people backing him in those rehearsals, if they ever had a question about if they were doing too much or too little, he was like, "You play your instrument. All I'm asking you to do is serve the song. So
Right.
if you think less is more or vice versa, just do what you got to do to make the song great. But I'm not taking away the creative freedom that you have. You have your piece of the pie."
Yeah, I think that's a great saying. My caution for me in my mind is that sometimes there's the concept of fingerprints. Like you could have written the perfect song and it's perfect in every way, and a new
Oh,
guy
yeah.
comes in. And in order for him to connect to it, he's got to get his fingerprints in there. And so he's got to change it. I had a song when I was in Wild Souls that was getting played all over the country on the radio. And it was a jangly sort of pop song, very, I don't know, very sort of jamish. And a drummer came in. He's like, "I really hear a Motown feeling here." And I'm like, "You can't. This is on the radio." And he didn't want to be in the band. He quit because he wanted to get his fingerprints on it. But I think when you're developing songs, totally, but if something already exists, I think that's the exception.
Yeah, man. So, with the current lineup and with KNAC, I got it. I'm in
You
there.
did. Yep, you're in.
Man, just tell me a little bit about the journey of staking it out on the road, man. Tell me some stories, a little dirt from the road.
So it's very interesting. The band got put together over the course of time, and then we made some changes and we settled on this band. And the first time we went on the road together, went anywhere together, was to go out to California to record at Ed Stasium's. Ed Stasium produced our last EP, and Ed was the engineer on.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
And I trained in Georgia on that song. Ed recorded the Ramones and Mick Jagger and Living Color and the Talking Heads. He's a super duper famous guy and really, really helped a lot of guitar bands put it together. And So somehow, you know, somebody knew him and we got him the music, and he said he was interested in doing it. And I was really interested in seeing what he would do with the three guitars, because three guitars is a challenge. You know, you can't, I mean, it can get busy pretty easy, you know? So we went out there and we were pretty nervous, because that's a big, you know, big time guy. And, you know, we're setting up, and we've been rehearsing together for like, you know, 6 months or something like that. And we think we have the songs down. And we set up the drums in Ed's dining room, and the guitar amps are all in Ed's living room. We're all there. And, you know, he's really quiet. His house is really cool, beautiful, with all these really cool, like, movie and music memorabilia stuff all over the place. And, you know, we're waiting to break the ice, waiting to break the ice. And the drummer goes, "Hey, Ed, can I get some more snare?" And he goes, "Fuck you." And then that totally broke the ice. We went to dinner. We had such a good time with Ed. Ed was really cool. He taught me a lot about, you know, some about stuff. He made me work harder on vocals than I've ever worked before. Like, normally I would be like, "Ah, that's good enough." Ed was relentless, but he got like a really good series of performances out of me. Although, you know, we bickered a lot. But he was great. He had great stories, and he was a great guy. And that was a lot of fun. And then since then, you know, we went out to Arizona last year and played some shows out there. And then we played LA in May. We're out in LA, you know, and we always do East Coast stuff. Most of the time the band is really just, you know, you know, waiting around. Like, when you're someplace far away, there's a lot of free time to either do something funny or try to do something funny that backfires. So from the time you sound check till the time you play, and all those times between, a lot of wackiness happens. I'm sure you know.
Yeah, man. Man, that's cool. So how did y'all connect East Coast, West Coast like that with Ed out there?
Well, Johnny, the guitar player, like I said, he's been you know, played with a lot of really big time people and been involved in a lot of really professional, good projects. And he had done a record with Ed a long time ago, and he knew Ed. And so he just reached out to him and got Ed to listen. And Ed said, "Sure, come on out." Ed had a little bit of a schedule, and we flew out there to do it. And it was a really cool experience, just to be able to focus on nothing but music for a couple of weeks is a rare commodity, I think, in all of our lives, like, where you don't have to worry about anything else but the music. It was really good to sort of just do that and feel that. So,
yeah. Man, a big part of how I discovered who you were and your music was the music video Crash that was sent to me. Wow. It gave a little explanation about the song and what it was about, but I didn't need any help. It's a great video, and the words are powerful. The music is exhilarating is the way that it was put, and I have to agree with that, man. I was excited about the sound. I was excited to get to talk to you, man. So if you could tell us a little bit about the latest single, Crash.
Sure. So, you know, I think we all have our own demons, and I often wonder, you know, like, how people, I know it's, in some cases you can avoid your temptations. But a friend of mine is a known person, and they're out all the time, and they've been sober for 4 years plus, you know, whatever months, and you know, I see him all the time. He's at shows. He's at, people are smoking pot around him. People are doing drugs around him. People are drinking around him, and he fights it. And I thought to myself, like, man, I don't know if I could do it. So I use the analogy of a speeding car towards an imminent crash to sort of talk about that feeling of that temptation. Like, you know, you're speeding towards a brick wall, but you know, are you going to stop, not stop? And that's really what the song for me was about just not avoiding temptation and what would I do in that situation. So I just remembered that feeling and wrote it up.
Couldn't have found me at a better time. I had just gotten my first DUI.
Well,
I was going through the process of not only paying the fees and having to jump through all the hoops, but was also dealing with the other things that came with the DUI, which is there's a little bit of shame, yeah. But also the fact that I needed to start thinking about my own sobriety, and that I needed to start taking it a little bit more serious. And That was one of the puzzle pieces that kind of helped me on the direction that I'm in now. And I know that you're sober now, and it's been something that you've had to work through.
Yeah.
You tell me a little bit about your journey on that.
Well, so for me, it's family historically. My dad was a bad drunk. His dad was a bad drunk. My sister, my oldest sister, was a bad alcoholic. She killed herself a few years back because of it. I've had other family members go through stuff, and then myself, I've fought my own demons about the things that I've dealt with. But I think the thing, the shame is the hardest part. And I think in fact, I wrote a song called Shame on Undertow. If you look up under my actual name, Tom Karnak, on Spotify, give that Undertow a listen.
Will
It's
do.
me dealing with that. It's like me waking up and then living the same day over and over again, trying to like rise above the things that are broken in me. And I always try to remind myself, it's not my fault. I was handed this deck of this dealt this hand. But how I play this hand is up to me. So that's the control that you can take from it. And that's what I came to terms with. And during that time period when I was just not playing music anymore, I wrote that whole record about coming to terms with who you are, learning to live with who you are, learning how to get past it and let it go. And letting it go is a huge part of it. You have to be like, you know what? It's not my fault that that shit happened to me, but I make a choice every day how I let it impact me today. And I know that sounds like that, things
Sure.
that people say, like hang in there, cat poster or some shit, but it really is true for me, so.
Yeah, and I've got friends in the area that I've been connecting with. They're musicians as well, and their encouragement has been very much like that. And also they said when you get to the other side, you're going to find that your creativity is going to spike.
Yeah. Yeah, I was
And
always worried about that too. Like, will I be able to
cuz I
create?
wrote a lot when I was drinking. And I had never really done it sober, so I was like, I hope that doesn't dry up.
No, but it really what's the drinking part is just, it's just some mask that you put on for a little bit of time. What's writing underneath? I mean, maybe you're writing what you think the mask is, but you're writing it, So, I mean, I would just say this, no matter what else happens, you are always worthy of your best effort, always. And you do that for you because that's what you deserve, right?
Right on.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
anyway.
appreciate that, man. And
No
like I
worries.
say, just finding
Congrats and good luck.
yeah, it's a daily battle. But like songs like Crash, and now I know to go back on Undertow and look into that. It's good to hear those songs, and it's easy to relate to. It's like, well, that's exactly where I'm at.
That's one of the things that got me involved in music. When I was a little kid, I was grew up in a very violent household, and I was, very frightened and fearful all the time. And music, hearing music was like a world I could step into that, like embraced me. And all the things that, like singing songs and all that made me feel like I belong someplace. It was something that was totally mine that no one else could touch and break. So that was the reason for music for me. I mean, I very clearly remember, things that happened in my life. And I'll tell you, my dad was a serial adulteress. And when I was a kid, he was a plumber, so he would always be on the road going doing plumbing jobs. And my mom didn't trust him, so she used to send his kids with him. And I very clearly remember, and I was still single digits, maybe 9, maybe 8, something like that. My dad going to somebody's apartment, and he said he was going to go fix somebody's pipes. And he and a woman went down the hallway, and another woman sat there with me while my dad went in that room and had sex. And I could hear it. And I remember very clearly that woman turned the radio up, and it was that song Downtown by Petula Clark, which I cannot hear at all. Every time I hear it, it just puts me in that room. But like to me, like that, all those things like that. That music is just that soundtrack to what happens there. And it really is a snapshot of it for you, and that feel and that moment and everything about it. So for me, if I want to write something that feels that way, I can remember that moment. And it's cathartic for me to write about it. So.
Well, just the issue of, and it happened to be an EP. I'd like to talk about this for a little while, but you're on the outside. with mental health and everything that you had going on with that EP, what brought it out and what made you want to share it with everybody?
Well, like I said, I have to feel it in order for me to be able to put something into it live and sing it. I mean, otherwise it's a waste. So all my songs are deeply, deeply personal. What's happened as I've gotten older is I disguise it less. I'm much more direct, whereas I might have used tons of symbolism in the past and maybe I would have known what it was about. You would have never known what it was about. But I've gotten more honest with myself and I'm more comfortable with who I am, I think. And outside is that feeling. Like, I don't know about you. I have never, ever felt like I belonged anywhere. I've always been different. I've always been, you know, I thought different things and the other kids were talking about, you know, like, you know, going to play wiffle ball. And I was like, dude, I'm going to write a script. You know, like, I mean, just crazy shit. And man, I was the only who thought that way.
I've got a song called Black Sheep. And I mean, the chorus is just that. It's always feeling like I'm on the outside. But yeah. Also, like, whenever someone tells me something nice, like almost to try to let me in, the line is, I can see the bullshit in your teeth.
Wow, that's a good one.
I think you're lying to me. I don't believe you. And so, I'm with that.
So here's the thing. Like, I don't know if you've ever done any relaxation therapy or any, like, meditation or anything. It's interesting. I have a hard time with it because I get impatient. But I will tell you, there are things about it that are really true. And the one thing is this, sometimes your brain is telling you there's a storm when there isn't. And so you imagine that you're on a jet and you're on an airplane and the airplane can just rise above the storm and be in peaceful, clear times. It's the sky's blue up above the storm, but your brain is sometimes telling you it's a storm and it isn't true. And, you know, when people are complimenting you, you have to take it at face value. Some people will lie, but some people are telling the truth. And I think that it's important that you hold on to those ones because they took the time out of their day. It mattered to them enough for them to come and say something nice. You're saying something about my songs that you think that is nice, that I like. I could say that it's bullshit or whatever, but I think when people make that effort and they take that time, then
genuine,
then I should accept it as genuine. People that are bullshitting, it always comes out in the end, you know, like they can't fool you for very long because you can't be insincere for a very long time and not have some hints of it. I mean, at least I hope. I'm sure there's psychopaths out there that are just waiting to take my wallet. but you know what? In general, like, I work in, my day job is in the IT for a luxury fashion company. And I travel a lot and I do a lot of interaction with people and I meet a lot of people and I was, you know, there's conversations all day, every day. Most people, the vast majority of people, they are good people who one-on-one will let their guard down if you let your guard down. And if you're genuine with them, they'll be genuine with you. And when people aren't that way, I think a really healthy thing to think is, I did not walk that mile in that person's shoes. I can't judge them. I don't know that if I had their DNA and their life experience, if I'd be better than them, worse than them, or exactly the same as them. You don't know. And because you don't know, you can't judge it. I don't know, man. I might be the biggest asshole in the world if I had that guy's life, or, you know? So people, if they're genuine, great. And if they're not genuine, I feel bad that they got to a point where they're not genuine anymore.
Oh, man, you brought up the fashion world. How did that world open up to you?
So I was in sales when I first got married to my first wife, and I was really bad at sales. I was too honest, and I didn't have it in me. Like, other guys in sales would call their customers and beg them to buy something this month, say they could return it next month, like to make their numbers. And like, to me, that just seemed like horrible. So I looked around and I tried to figure out what was a good thing to do to make a living that could support my family and also that I wouldn't rip my own head off. So I learned about IT. I went to school at night. I never went to college after high school. Even though I was super smart after high school, I went on tour. I wrote a record, you know, like I did the things that mattered to me. There's like nothing in college that held any interest to me. I was bored off my ass at school and used to get in trouble and things like that because I was a punk. But IT looked interesting. I went to night school and learned network engineering. Then I became a project manager and then I started doing projects all over. And I was on a project in Atlanta, Georgia. And the woman on the team said, you know, My boyfriend runs some IT for a fashion company. He'd love to have you on his team. And I was really tired of traveling. All four kids were little, and I was working in Atlanta, Georgia, like Monday through Friday, and it felt terrible, guilty, lonely. And so I took this job, and it was in fashion, and I actually loved it. And I loved fixing problems and being efficient, and I love mentoring people and all those things. So those are the things that I really love about work. And because I cared about it, because I found something in it that I could be passionate about, I did pretty good.
Yeah. And so I guess working in that field, it still leaves you enough time to be able to do music and play when you like.
It
Not.
doesn't. It doesn't. It's
No.
burning the candle on it's both ends and in the middle. It's a lot. I mean, I have a full-time job. I have a baby. I have grown kids. I have a marriage, and I also play in a band. I write every songs every day. I record. While I was waiting to jump on the call, I was editing something this morning. Like just
Well, brother,
craziness.
man, I really appreciate the time. That's burning it, not at both ends, but almost every end, man. I didn't know if you had anything else that you wanted to add to on the outside,
Oh yeah,
on the outside.
sorry. I went off on a tangent. Sorry about that. This is me being a little deliriously tired, so forgive me. The outside is just that feeling, like never felt like you belong. Like it's the yin yang. Like I do that in a lot of my songs. Like I'll halfway through the song, I'll start talking myself off the ledge. So in this song, it's like the verses are, why am I on the outside? Is it because of what I've done or said? Like, why don't I fit in? Like, what the fuck? And then the middle part is different is what you need to be. There's strength in being different. It's what makes you interesting. It's what makes you unique. It's what makes you you. And, it's a good thing. It's a strength.
Yeah.
But
Well, right on, man. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I had three more questions and I wanted to walk it out of the door. Question one is just for those listening or watching, if they wanted to keep up with KNAC and everything that you have going on, where is the best place to do that? A website, a specific social media?
KNACMusic.com, KANAKMUSIC.com, KNAC Music. All of our links to all of our social media are there. But we're on everything everywhere, all the socials, all the platforms.
Yeah. Question two is, man, I know that you're in the cooking. What's your favorite dish to prepare?
So right now I make a lot of soups that I love because it's fall. So right now I'm getting ready to make this butternut squash and Italian sausage soup with a little bit of sage that I really love. But I also lately have been making a lot of I think I saw the recipe on the internet. It's feta rolls. You take a piece of feta, put a little olive oil on it, red pepper flakes, oregano, and drizzle it with honey, and then roll it up in a gluten-free quesadilla. Air fry it for 10 minutes. Delicious, sweet,
Whoa.
savory, but also a little bit of the heat from the hot pepper.
Yeah. And last question to walk out the door. Once again, Tom, man, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate the openness when it comes to your journey with sobriety and also mental health. If someone was having a hard time, whether they're in music or, man, they're just working a 9 to 5, and they have done decided that they want to try to begin the road to sobriety. What advice would you give them?
You surround yourself with people that you know will help you because you're going to need to rely on them. They're going to have to be strong for you. I mean, and if you're by yourself, then try to find a group to help with, because sometimes it gets really to that point where if you didn't have that accountability to another person, you might not get through that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Tom, I really appreciate your time. Would you like to plug the new record or
Sure. On the Outside EP is out. I think Crash is the latest single. There's videos on YouTube. Give it a listen. We're really proud of it. It came out the way we wanted it to, and really excited about it. And we're in the studio recording the next record, which will be out, I think, February.
Awesome. Well, Tom, thank you so much.
Alan, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.